Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Good morning, millennials. Welcome back to the Morning Toast. Happy hump day. Ooh, ooh. It's Wednesday, our favorite day here at the Morning Toast for a multitude of reasons. One, most likely Theo's going to be here on Wednesday because it's hump day, and he is here, so that's wonderful.
I mean, we could end the show now because Theo is here.
Because we've done our job.
We got our H-O-T hit of tigs.
Also, a fabulous day because it's Dear Toaster segment, our weekly advice segment, skimmed through. Fabulous submissions today, like really funny and interesting, and I think you'll have a hot take on one of them specifically.
Okay.
And then we also have to recap The Bachelorette, so it's just going to be like a long, juicy, interesting show if you're sitting at work or working from home and you're just like, damn, I wish like 1 hour would go away. Like, we're about to do that for you.
Here, magic. Poof. And our Bachelorette segment is called Afterdale. I just want to normalize calling it Afterdale because like when you said that on last week's show and then I went in my phone looking for Afterdale photos.
Me too.
I was literally laughing so hard. Someone made the funniest comment being like, I miss being like one of the 9 people on the live stream. And it's literally where we were at one time when we did our Riverdale after show Afterdale. There was 9 people on the live stream, but one of them was the creator of Riverdale, yeah. Writer Ross. So we had to keep doing it. It was a weird time.
That was such an interesting like time for us and project to take on. It was like literally nobody asked, but Riverdale, this was season 2 and it was like just after like the explosive season 1, we thought we were really doing something and we had this like amazing set. It turned out to be like a torturous, if you're like new here and you have no idea what Afterdale is, with our old show, we like did a spinoff called Afterdale and it turned out to be like such a torturous event because we would have to stay in the office till 9, watch Riverdale from 9 to 10 and then go live on YouTube at 10:30 and like be in full hair and makeup with Ben and Margo, and then we were in the middle of Times Square and then have to like get home by 11 and then like go back to the studio the next morning. It was just like not an ideal schedule for us.
Yeah, like God forbid someone had sent us screeners. But also, I think Afterdale is really emblematic of who we are because you can see that entrepreneurial spirit like coming through even when we were just technically cogs in a corporate machine. And I think Afterdale was technically like our first TNN show.
Wow, you're right. It was the first kind of expansion, like branching out of our business.
Yeah.
That was also such a weird time. I remember getting a phone call from my agent at the time who represented one of the girls on the show and was like, you have to be nicer to her. Like, she like heard that you were talking shit. I'm like, literally 9 people watch this show. Like, there's no way this girl heard me say anything.
No, the 9 people were just a cast. So, like, we couldn't stop because we were like,
because the creator of the show was watching and we were like hating it and we can't let him down. Literally, the creator tunes in.
It was just a really tough time.
And by the way, it created this like deep resentment for me of the franchise Riverdale.
Yeah, no, but it's a funny piece of Toast history.
Yeah.
And it's hysterical. It was me, Margo, Ben and Claudia, and we just were recapping Riverdale on Afterdale. But now Afterdale is this segment of the Bachelorette recap, what will happen after Dale.
Right, it used to be the Morning Rose, now it's just going to be After Dale.
Yeah, no, I like After Dale better because it harks back to our history.
Me too, it's pertinent to the situation.
Quite pertinent. Speaking of pertinence, last night, after Bachelorette, I started The Meaning of Mariah, finally. After I had my amuse-bouche on Monday, I was able to take it on.
So glad.
I'm 15% through. You were right. It's very dense and like tight. I want to say, what's the word? Like, it's very like each sentence has so much like
full,
so many descriptors, so much information in it that it's like it's kind of a long read. And also the beginning is her story of her childhood, which is also very intense. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very heavy book and I'm really, really enjoying it.
It's like intense stories written through even more intense sentences.
Yes. And I think that's what the story deserves.
Agreed.
And I'm really enjoying learning more about Mariah's childhood. And I feel like it definitely is already affecting like how I see her. Like I keep thinking about that New Year's Eve performance. Mm-hmm. When she just like got completely.
I don't think it was New Year's Eve. I think it was the tree lighting at Rockefeller Center.
Oh, yeah, because she's Christmas. Anyways.
And isn't it interesting, like, you totally understand her obsession with Christmas?
Yes. No, these sort of things, like, everything's just starting to make sense.
Because, like, Christmas is just, like, emblematic of, like, the traditional family. And, like, growing up, that's all she wanted.
And now I'm just, like, thinking back to those moments, like, the tree lighting where her singing went sort of sideways. And I'm like, we need to have more respect for her.
I completely agree.
Like, this is a woman who has proven over and over again that she is one of the greatest singers of our time. So even if she has an off night, like, she's still Mariah Carey.
Yeah. Fuck off. Put some respect on her name. Yeah. I agree. You're right. Yeah. You're totally right.
No, and, like, I'm talking to myself, too.
You know, Of course I posted that video. Like, I thought it was crazy. Somebody isolated her vocals from the actual track, and it was just her voice, and it was, like, awful.
Yeah.
But she deserves some grace, like, being in the industry for 30 years and...
And really being, like, having the voice of an angel.
And, yeah, being at the top of her game vocally since the time she was 18.
It's not like it was ever a question, like, is she really singing?
It's not
is
like,
she
you know,
really talented?
Award shows, and it's like, oh, she really can't sing. Like, you literally go to award shows and you see the people who use autotune and who genuinely cannot sing, and the people who are just as talented as they are on iTunes as they are in person.
Yeah.
Mariah Carey's always been one of the latter.
Yeah, but like, also on another level, like...
The whistle...
It's just incredible. So I look forward to reading more of that book today.
Maybe are you tomorrow. A lamb?
A lamb? What's that?
That's what she calls her fans.
Oh,
lambs.
I didn't even know that. I can't wait to get to that part.
And I get the lamb thing.
And I'm on my way. I'm just going to say, like, I'm on my way. And I'm excited to finish the book and then share some of the biggest bombshells that I've learned from it.
Yeah. When she was on Watch What Happens Live, she said, like, people, I think, were shocked at, like, most of the book is about her childhood, not about, like, fame, Derek Jeter. Even though that's the stuff that got, like, pulled in the press. Because, like, in order to understand the meaning of Mariah, you need to understand, like, all that she's been through. So if you're like me and, like, your favorite part of a book is, like, celeb juicy tell-all, you're going to have to wait a little bit.
That's usually my favorite part, too. But I'm realizing, maybe it's just me getting older, or just reading more, that, like, I really do enjoy and get so much out of, like, learning about Mariah's childhood, learning about her parents' childhood. Like, it's all part of the fabric of your life, and it's all important.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it a much better sense of the celebs that I love when I can understand their childhood.
And by the way, you can always tell through their books, like, which celebrities have obviously been through extensive therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they place so much emphasis on, like, these stories in their childhood, like Jessica Simpson, Howard Stern, Mariah Carey. You could just tell from the book that, like, therapy is a huge part of their lives.
Yeah, but then also, do you ever feel like there are some people where it's just, like, their childhood, like, isn't that, like, I feel like it could go either way. Like,
yeah, no, sometimes, like, your childhood is just your childhood, and sometimes, like, it'll affect you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I guess it depends what happens in that childhood.
And I think it's, like, no matter how you grew up or where you grew up, like, some people just, like, had childhoods that, like, deeply affected them. And
childhood
trauma. Yeah, and some people just didn't.
Yeah, I agree. So that's exciting that I'm looking forward to that. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at mentally today.
The book, yeah, that's great. Mentally, I am just here, you know, present with my son, feeling strong, feeling really excited about, you know, the next couple days because I got a big weekend plan. We're actually going to dinner, which these days is like...
A big weekend plan.
It's basically like I'm going to Vegas, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't be stopped and I can't be tamed. And then we roll right out into the weekend to Tuesday, where I feel like I've never been more excited for anything in my entire life. Tuesday, I have a major announcement. Now, RTK Toasters like might know it already, but I don't want to spoil it. I'm going to like make it into such a big deal. Tuesday's going to be such a fabulous event, a fabulous show. And not only do I have like a major, major career milestone like to share with you... It gets better.
It does get better, but it's all like wrapped up into one. As far as your special projects, secret projects go, this is one that I am so excited about too. And I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
And the
Thank
countdown
you so
much. To Tuesday is on.
The countdown to Tuesday is on.
Eh. Okay. Also, I just would be RDH if I didn't point out the fact that we are both some turtlenecked queens today.
You know, I feel like I'm really getting a lot of my style inspiration from TikTok, and the kids are wearing tight turtlenecks.
Are
and, like,
they?
That's what I have to do.
Okay. Well, I didn't see that, and I just
you're just naturally on trend.
Well, every time I wear this blazer that I bought because like Lauren Elizabeth had it, and I thought it was so cute, I always wear this turtleneck with it because it was the turtleneck I was wearing the night that I tried on her blazer.
Oh, interesting.
So to me, they just like go together.
Some things just stick with you.
Yeah. They just go better together.
And probably always will. Should we dive in?
Should we? Okay. I just want to say before we dive in, I'm a little like off today, I guess, because I forgot my iPad.
Oof.
You know, and I know I left it charging, but I really did think that I picked it up and put it in my bag. But I've been having like weird, like leaving the house problems.
Yeah, me too.
3 days in a row.
It's the mask.
3 days in a row, I left my already made coffee upstairs in my kitchen. And today and Monday, I went back for it. But yesterday, it was too late before I remembered. So I'm just like being forgetful.
Wait.
So if you hear some like typing, it's because I'm using my computer today. I'm really sorry.
Jackie, you and I have spoken extensively about like just leaving your iPad here and charging it here. Like, why don't you do that?
Well, yesterday specifically, I took it with me because for my babysitting mission, I thought I might want to watch some Wild Wild Country, which by the way, I finished. And do not waste your time. Just like Google the story because I'm sure that's more interesting.
Speaking of not wasting your time, if you have been influenced by me to think about starting to watch The Vow, don't. Because you know what I just found out? You're going to die. They're coming out with a second season.
Oh my God.
Of a documentary, okay? The story is not that good.
Of a documentary where there's an episode of American Greed on it already, so I would just go straight there.
Oh, that's, and now...
The story of Rajneesh Pram should have been, and maybe it already is, an episode of American Greed, even though it's not, like, totally about greed. It depends how you look at it. It's just I feel like they could have made it work.
There's also now a Starz documentary on it, and they actually got India Oxenberg, which is pretty cool. I actually might watch that NXIVM documentary. Hopefully they don't drag it out. Also, we did not talk about, but Shark Tank is back. And do you know who their guest shark is?
Who?
Kendra Scott, the necklace designer. Like, everyone wears those little necklaces, and she seems really cool. And they've been, like, just putting on... When I was watching The Bachelor last night with the ABC commercials, it was being promoted so much, and their commercials are so inspiring. Like, I just want to start my own business and, like, watch Shark Tank at the same time. We need to start rewatching
Shark Tank.
Keeping up with Shark Tank.
Yeah. Okay, I'm down, because, like, that's where I do some of my best shopping.
No, I know.
And interesting. I'd love to learn more about Kendra Scott.
And then also, speaking of ABC, I put on my TV at 7 o'clock, and I watched Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, and I think I'm at the place in my life where I need to make that a part of my daily routine. Like, first of all, watching Jeopardy, just, like, I got, like, three answers, I'm not going to lie. It was Frank Lloyd Wright, because, like, it was a question about the architect, and that was literally the only architect I knew, and I screamed it at the TV, and it was right, and Ben was so impressed. And then they were talking about some vegetable, like, heart, and the only vegetable I know that has a heart is an artichoke. I was also thinking maybe hearts of palm, but I just went with artichoke. And then the other one was, it was a comedian question. There was a whole... category of comedians. I don't remember what it was. Ben was so impressed. And it just, like, I don't know, it really made me feel, like, good and smart. And then I went to Wheel of Fortune and, like, played with my brain a little bit. And, you know, I know it's, like, shows reserved exclusively for, like, 70-year-olds, but I think that's going to be my vibe moving forward.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, this last year has really aged us. So maybe, like, we are at, like, the mental capacity of, like, what we want to watch is what a 70-year-old wants to watch, A Place to Call Home.
Yes, and Jeopardy.
Get on it.
And Jeopardy. I just, like, I feel like Jeopardy is it. I think I might actually be, like, the least qualified person to, like, I would, there's a million game shows I could go on. I would actually be excellent at Family Feud, and I'm pretty good at Wheel of Fortune, but, like, I might be the dumbest person on planet Earth. Like, I will never get onto Jeopardy, but maybe if I watch enough episodes, like, it'll happen for me, and I start at 26. By the time I'm 50,
you
could happen.
Exciting. Things to look forward to.
So, yes, sorry. We got a little off track.
I think now, without further ado, it is time for the Fast Five Stories that you need to know before you wake up and take a bite out of your morning toast.
Yes, Jackie, that is not true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think here at the Morning Toast, it's really important that we put an emphasis on the truth.
I agree.
And transparency, and just, like, being open and honest and raw and vulnerable. And in the spirit of that, I just think... I'm trying not to, like, get choked up. I have something to say.
Please.
It's been a long time coming. A lot of people have wanted me to address this, and... I don't know, just today feels like the right time.
Okay. Take all the time you need.
Today's episode is brought to you by Nothing New. Comfortable, durable, and sustainable, Nothing New is proving that eco-friendly doesn't need to look eco-friendly. Nothing New makes the most fabulous shoes, and they're made from recycled water bottles and 100% sustainable materials. So that's recycled fishing nets, cotton, recycled rubber, recycled cork, the list goes on. They're designed with comfort in mind, so you never know that you're wearing a pair of sneakers that's made from, like, old water bottles. The name is Nothing New, obviously, because they're made from nothing new. All their materials are recycled. They come in a bunch of different styles. They have low tops, high tops. They also make fabulous socks. The shoes come in like over 15 colors. It's a fabulous product. One, because you just like always need like a fabulous pair of sneakers, high tops or low tops. And it's fabulous because you're like saving the environment by purchasing a pair of shoes. And that feels good. Because it costs more to make an eco-friendly sneaker without the harmful glues and chemicals that most sneakers are made with, Nothing New doesn't offer sales or discounts at this time, but they are giving back to the environment. For our listeners, they'll plant a tree for every pair purchased. So go to nothingnew.com/toast. That's nothingnew.com/toast. And try a pair with free shipping and returns today. And Nothing New will plant a tree in a forest in need. So you get a fabulous pair of shoes and then you get to plant a tree. That's nothingnew.com/toast. You have to use that link. And you also get free shipping and returns if you use that link for a fabulous pair of shoes.
Check awesome. It out. Awesome. Sign on. Get great shoes. First up, word on the street is that Sofia Richie has a new boyfriend. Hmm. Let's meet him. His name is Matthew Morton, and the two were spotted grabbing dinner at Nobu. He is...
Is he Camila Cabello's ex-boyfriend?
No. That's Matthew Hussey, the dating, the love guru.
That was, like, the weirdest time in Camila Cabello's life, where she was, like, actually dating a nobody.
Yeah. But Matthew Morton... Sofia Richie. They just went to Nobu, so it could have been like a business dinner because he is the founder of Cha Cha Matcha, but he could also be her rumored new beau.
I'm going to say something controversial.
What, you don't like matcha?
Well, of course. I think that goes without saying. But I just think that like the franchise Cha Cha Matcha, which is a fabulous name, is just like the most unnecessary institution on the face of the earth. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. They sell matcha at Starbucks, or I assume they do. I don't know. I've never ordered it, but they sell it at like every place. And I just think like having its own dedicated chain is like a level of privilege. Like I just can't relate to. Do you know what I mean?
No, I really, really do.
But like the name is so cute at the store. And, like, the store branding, is so cute.
You just want to go there and take pictures. Proud to say I've never done that. But like that's also just because I don't really live close to one.
I don't know. And I feel like we have listeners who have literally never heard of Cha Cha Matcha. And like I'm actually envious of that life experience. Like I don't know how I got myself into a place where like I'm constantly being bombarded by like Cha Cha Matcha-ness.
Yeah.
And I want nothing to do with it. Like,
yeah.
I think that like as a brand, I am the antithesis of Cha Cha Matcha.
Yeah. Like if they opened like a competitor across the street, it'd be you. And it's like McDonald's.
And we would literally just sell like McFlurries. Soda and milkshakes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel that for you.
And I just could never get into the headspace.
Because I completely agree.
Okay. I'm glad. And because like, it's not even that I'm like an unhealthy person, and which I am. I'm not denying that. And I don't think that there's no need for like a healthy cafe. I think it's fabulous. But like to have an entire brand identity be associated with like matcha is just, it's so unnecessary. And, you know, we're living in crazy, unprecedented times. And I feel like people are really prioritizing like what's important to them. And I just don't think matcha is. And maybe I'm wrong. You guys will obviously let me know. But I don't know. I think I'm hitting the nail on the head with this one.
I just
but
think
continue.
You're speaking to like a lot of people, and you're also offending a lot of people.
And you know what? I just feel
and
like
that's what you do.
That is so me. And I don't know. I just don't have like a good feeling that like our audience is like huge matcha fans. I just feel like I know our brand, and I just think like we're on the right side of history in this one.
Yeah, I feel you as well. But apparently Sofia Richie likes her matcha.
Oh, I believe she's only dating him just to get the free matcha because you know what? Matcha is expensive.
Matcha, it's very expensive. Also,
expensive grass.
This story hurts my heart a little bit because it means like that maybe Scott and Sophia are done for real this time. And I ship them completely. I will ship them. I'll sail around the world in my ship.
You're Captain Sandy.
Yeah.
But of an empty vessel.
Yeah, nobody's on board.
Nobody's on board.
That's so sad.
Mayday.
Nobody's on board.
Mayday.
It's just me and one cup of matcha.
Wow, that sounds like a bad time.
That's what I'm saying.
So, sorry, who's dating? Oh, yes. Sofia Richie and this man.
But it's only because they were spotted out at Nobu once. And now I'm starting to like be really skeptical about Nobu Malibu.
Will
you follow me on this one?
100%.
Because the Kardashians are always there. And they're always getting photographed there. And so they know that if they go there, they're going to get photographed. They wear their best looks with a matching mask. They bring their friends.
And their best cars. Because you get... paparazzied at the valet.
It's a place to see and be seen. And
it's like the racetrack.
Everybody's going to be up in your business.
100%.
So I have to question Sophia Richie as a Kardashian extension, knows that this is what goes down at Nobu Malibu. And so she's either like wanting everyone to think she's in a new relationship, or it's like not an actual, like if it was like a real treasured, you know, blossoming, blooming relationship, like I don't think you would step out to Nobu Malibu just mere weeks after a serious relationship ended, which makes me believe that this is not a serious relationship.
Okay, that's true. But let me offer just one brief rebuttal. You're totally right. But Nobu Malibu is also the most delicious and fabulous restaurant, and maybe she just couldn't resist.
I hear that, but
maybe she wanted a premium dining experience with a premium view and a premium setting and a premium vibe, and this was the price she had to pay for that experience. Okay, maybe.
Two things to say to that. One, like, she could have done takeout. Two,
not the same.
Two, I do think there are other places in Malibu that are for celebrities that are extremely private, with good food too, and on the water.
Yeah, no, and I just want to say, like, there is a way, I hate to be like such like a name dropper, but I just want to pull on some personal experience to let you know that, like, if a celebrity doesn't want to be seen, they don't have to be seen. Like, what would you say in LA proper, like, is the most fabulous restaurant, star-studded?
Craig's.
Okay, so I was at Craig's with a very, very famous person. Now, I don't want to be a name dropper, but it was Kate Beckinsale. We were having an amazing time. We were with another friend, and he was going to stay. And she was like, do you want me to drive you home? Like, I have a car. And I'm like, oh, my God, fabulous. We're going to walk out together. Like, literally, there's 50 paparazzis who just stand outside Craig's. And she was like, come with me. And I'm like, oh, my God, not only am I going to get to drive home with her, like, I'm going to be paparazzi. Like, maybe she'll, like, show me off to the pops. Of course, we go out the back entrance, and we're in, like, a car that has, like, umbrellas covered all over it. And, like, we never were seen by anyone. So the most, even at the most fabulous restaurant in L.A., like, you can be in and out without being seen. So if you want to go to Nobu and not be seen, I guarantee you there's a way. There's a private room. There's a back entrance. There's something. I'm just saying.
Okay.
You pull up on your boat from the back. Like, there are ways to do things.
Yeah, there's not a dock or a port.
No, I didn't want to share that
because
story.
Because they do not ship.
You know that it pained me to be such a name dropper. Like, I didn't want to share, you know, that personal experience because I hate to be that person. You guys know I'm like so not like that.
But it's germane to the situation.
It's so pertinent to the situation that I had to call upon my personal experience. I'm sorry. I won't do that again.
It's okay. I mean, it
until helps. The next time it's germane to the situation.
Yeah, no, it helps add color to the story.
Yeah, no, I'm nothing if not like a colorful storyteller.
That's actually very true.
Thank you.
Okay, speaking of fame, Nicole Kidman says fame when she was single was much harder to navigate. Yeah. So Nicole Kidman was speaking with the Sydney Morning Herald in a recent interview, and the actress told the publication that she thinks fame was much harder for her when she was single because there wasn't a shield. There wasn't a place to go and to work through it with a partner, she said,
yeah,
before she noted how she would lean on others to be her safeguard, including her sister.
Love to see it. Who knew Nicole Kidman had a sister?
Antonia.
Oh, I like that name.
I was lucky because my sister would come. I remember her flying to Cannes in 2001 because it's frightening walking up that red carpet with all that security, feeling very insecure and not quite sure where to go or how to survive.
Right.
Nicole, who recently celebrated her 14th wedding anniversary with husband Keith Urban, continued to detail her connection with her sister. If you have a sister, as a woman, it's such a blessing because there's this closeness where you can really delve into another woman with safety. We're almost twins and we've been through a lot. I just, like, love the sister appreciation moment.
I love the sister appreciation moment. I love that, like, she went from being, you know, single and obviously struggling with the fame to now being in what I perceive to be, like, the most fabulous, healthy marriage of all time, where, like, they're both successful and supportive of one another's dreams, and they live in Nashville in a palace and, like, probably have a farm with a goat. And I just think, like, what more can you ask for the most precious woman on earth, Nicole Kidman?
No, you really can't ask for much more. And to know that she has a sister, like, behind every great woman, there's a sister who, like, completely loves and supports everything that she does.
That is so true. And you know what? Normalize changing that awful state, like, phrase, behind every great man, there's a greater woman, to behind every great woman, there's a greater sister. I just think it's better. It's more appropriate.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that sisterhood is just so beautiful.
And I love, like, a publication, the Sydney Herald, is that what it was called?
Sydney Morning Herald.
I love a publication that highlights and appreciates sisterhood.
Yeah, and, like, I'm sure there was a lot of tea in this interview with Nicole Kidman, and that, like, they chose to focus on, like, the bond of sisterhood.
Beautiful.
What's that from? The bonds of sisterhood.
I have no idea. Shit. But Claudia, that's beautiful.
Oh, it's from Legally Blonde, of course, when Victor Garber is, like, making fun of her for not sharing Brooke's alibi.
Which, I just have to say, I know she won the case without it, but it was a little silly.
It was, but like to me, yes, of course, she could have shared the alibi. Everyone could have gone home. But knowing that your client has an airtight alibi, you know that they are innocent. So yes. when Elle says, like, we wouldn't be very good lawyers if we can't get her off, knowing that she didn't do it, knowing for sure that she didn't do it.
Yes, okay. I meant it was kind of silly of Allie Larder.
This is what he said. Screw sisterhood.
That is what he said. It was a little silly of Brooke Wyndham, Bronwyn Wyndham Burke. It was a little silly of her to not want to tell people she got liposuction and possibly go down for manslaughter. Like, that was silly.
Yeah.
Like, I know you have a reputation to uphold, but would you rather be a fraud or a murderer?
Well, she hired the best in the biz, so, like, she thought she had a third option, which, by the way, she did.
You only get one chance at trial. You don't, like, juggle and take a gamble on whether or not, like, just tell everyone you got liposuction.
Well, for her, that was juggling and taking a gamble with her career.
Yeah, and she said, I would rather rot in prison than spend the rest of my life, whatever, you know, she said that thing.
Yeah, she said it. She said what she said.
Oh, also, by the way, yesterday, as promised on our Instagram, we posted not a full list, but an introductory list to what we consider to be some of the greatest content uppers of all times, which is basically just movies that are funny, fun, will make you laugh. They're not too serious. They have a great cast. They have great music. It's just a small introduction to content uppers, which is something we've been talking about a lot during these unprecedented times. It's never been more necessary to have content that ups you. And so check out our Instagram at The Morning Toast. We recently got verified and I'm very excited about it. I just want to plug it.
Check it out. Okay, next story. Kim Kardashian settles a $6.1 million lawsuit with the security company from her Paris robbery.
Oh my God. I didn't know we were still playing this out.
No, me neither. Kim has secretly settled a $6.1 million lawsuit with the security company that, quote, failed to protect her during her devastating robbery in Paris, according to The Sun.
Pascal.
Yes, exactly. In October 2016, as we know, Kim was tied up and put in the bathtub of her hotel room by five armed robbers who had posed as cops to gain entry. They left with $10 million worth of jewelry, including a $5 million diamond ring from her husband, Kanye. Her bodyguard, Pascal Duvier, had left her alone in the room while he escorted her sisters, Courtney and Kendall, to the club. According to the British paper, Kim filed Pascal and then sued him and his company for negligence. But reps for Kim have not responded to this story. So it's like still a secret.
So Pascal owes Kim Kardashian $6 million.
The security company that either he works for or he owns.
Yeah. No, it's like part of me is like, yeah, why did he leave her alone? But at the same time, it's like, why did three of the most famous women on earth only have one security guard?
Yeah.
Kim shouldn't have been left alone. But what, were Kendall and Courtney supposed to go alone to a club?
Yeah.
They need more security. And you know what? I feel like that's what they took away from this. Like, their houses are fortresses. And it's so sad that, like, something so traumatic had to happen in order for them to, like, take their security so seriously. I feel like their security is literally, like, a character on the show. Like, they're always talking about, like, the gates and the security guards and the cameras. I just can't believe that, like, now. What year was this in?
This was 2016.
2016.
4 years later.
Yeah, like, we're still litigating. But that's how...
That's how
litigation works.
Yeah. Ooh, and I, like you said yesterday, she talks about it on the
Letterman,
I believe. So it'll be interesting to hear more if she chooses to talk about it. And if she doesn't, we understand.
Yeah, I think the Letterman is out today. It said Wednesday, but I don't know if it was next Wednesday or this Wednesday.
Dates are confusing.
So, by the way, in these unprecedented times, dates are so confusing.
Okay, next story, a little exciting news, a little exciting branding news. Bravo debuts the first official Real Housewives wine collection.
Oh.
This seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, Bravo is now only recently like getting on the bandwagon of like, let's make money on the Housewives when all the Housewives are making money on us,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Real Housewives fans have seen their fair share of wine-throwing incidents over the course of 14 years and a multitude of franchises. And finally, there's an official wine made specifically to sip on while you watch. The wines, which are made in partnership with Knocking Point Wines in Washington State, come in three varieties: the Real House Red, the Real House White, and the Real House Rosé.
That's cute.
Yeah.
Wait, Knocking Point Wine sounds familiar. Is that the same company that did Witches of WeHo wine?
I'll look it up.
I believe that it is.
Knocking Point Wine.
Which would just be interesting if like Stassi, Kristen, and Katie like set the precedent for like all of the Bravo wine partnerships. It's just something interesting to think about, and I think that they did.
Yes, it was Knocking Point.
Yeah, that's just interesting. This is a great idea. I mean, it's going to do great. I'm glad that Bravo, only recently has Bravo kind of started to monetize their fan base in a sense. Like, I feel like since the first episode of Housewives, the Housewives themselves have started to capitalize, monetize books, shows, other TV shows. Like, they've started to create fandoms and make money off of their audience, but Bravo only recently like started to do BravoCon and really kind of capitalizing on their cult following. And I think this is like the next step in that direction, and it's very smart.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I think it's smart and, like we said, a no-brainer. I think The Bachelor also did something similar, right?
Yeah.
And these are like limited special edition for the super fans. So if you want one, go and get it. I don't think it'll be around long.
Yeah, The Bachelor's been good about that, like over the years, like doing like different like events or podcasts. Like they kind of lean into it.
Yeah.
Whereas like Bravo, like all these women do their own podcasts having nothing to do with Bravo. Whereas like if Bravo had a podcast network where they gave all of their castmates a podcast, and some of them have very successful ones.
Don't give them too many good ideas, because like that's an amazing idea, and that is direct conflict with TNN. So.
Yeah, because then Margaret Joseph would have to leave.
Yeah.
Check out Caviar Dreams, Tuna Fish Budget with Margaret Joseph. Now available anywhere you find your podcasts.
I love Margaret Joseph.
Me too. Did you see that they're actually making a lot of progress on her house?
Yes.
I cannot wait. It looks so good. I feel like so many people in quarantine like let their lives just like slip away, but Marge has been
taking
care of everything she's been putting off, and her house looks so good. It's like such a unique like mod colorful palette, and I'm really into it.
Our fifth story is something, yeah, my ums are just getting out of control. Sorry, I'm working on them.
It's okay.
Our fifth story is some exciting TV reboot news that that people have actually asked for.
Okay.
MTV Cribs reboot has been announced with celebrity guests Caitlyn Jenner, JoJo Siwa, Christine Quinn, and RuPaul Drag Race's Alyssa Edwards.
Okay, I just have to say, of all those people, I have already seen Alyssa Edwards' house. She did Architectural Digest, and it was very shocking because you don't expect like this fabulous drag queen to live in like a cul-de-sac in a suburban neighborhood. Like, she just literally lives on like Wisteria Lane. It's very interesting. I've seen JoJo Siwa's house because she has a YouTube channel. I think honestly MTV Cribs like might have missed the mark, because while it's fabulous, I've literally seen everyone's house tour and everyone has seen our house tours. Like, it's just house tours on YouTube as a trend. Architectural Digest now does that. Like 73 questions, you see people's houses, like, wow. They're a little late.
Wow, this is a hot take I wasn't expecting.
No, but like,
I mean, for me, this is a story because of Christine Quinn.
And I'm dying to see her house.
Like, I honestly wouldn't have sought it out as a story. I'm dying to see her house. I think that she's an amazing choice. But I do agree that, like, when they're choosing celebrities who are influencers or digital celebrities, there's a good chance we've already gotten a house tour from them. And so I'm down for the idea of MTV Cribs. And I was actually just thinking about Cribs while reading Mariah Carey's book, because I remember her episode of MTV Cribs so distinctly. She showed her New York City penthouse, and like it was when we were so, so young. And I even remember her when she was in her shoe closet talking about how growing up she like only had one pair of shoes. And it was just all coming back to me. And I think that MTV Cribs is, they do not only great house tours, but like the whole production, the stories and everything is so, so good.
And they invented like fridge culture.
But they should be having on celebrities who we typically do not have access to, especially in the digital space.
I agree, because in a lot of ways in the digital space, they've totally missed the mark. Like, they should have brought back MTV Cribs as a YouTube series 5 years ago. And the fact that they didn't is such a, like, a mistake on their part. And now if they're bringing it back like in a real way and they're only highlighting people whose houses we've already seen, it's so silly.
Yeah, no, like, show me the home of,
and by the way, I love
Nicole Kidman.
Right. No, I love Alyssa Edwards, I do, but like when you said RuPaul's Drag Race, no, show me RuPaul's house. Show me that World of Wonder money. Like, that's something I would never see on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with your take, and you've changed my mind.
Wow, that literally never happens. I'm just on one today. I'm very excited. Oh, we're going to do The Bachelor recap,
yeah,
right?
Or also to show, like, even Caitlyn Jenner, I'm sure her house is amazing, but we've seen a lot of it on, like, I Am Kate. So it has to be someone who doesn't have a YouTube presence, who does not have a reality show.
No, it really has to be, like, traditional celebrities, i.e. TV and movie stars.
Yeah, like,
who don't have YouTube channels.
Who might not even have Instagram.
Right, which is very rare, because, like, even most YouTube stars have YouTube. I mean, most TV stars have YouTube channels.
Yeah, true.
Okay, let's dive into our TV recap segment, which is The Bachelorette. I have so many thoughts on last night's episode, and I knew...
Oh, I need to pull up my thoughts.
And I know that you and I actually really disagree on one big thing, but let's just go chronologically through the episode.
Though I watched your story, and I think, once again, you were maybe changing my mind.
Okay, because last night's episode was very strange. I feel like I really started out with this positive headspace where, like, I know, like, Claire was kind of a controversial pick, but the more I got to see her, I don't know, I was just, like, excited about the episode. I feel like in a lot of ways, I love that she's 39. I don't think it makes the show any worse. If anything, it makes the show better. Like, to have a grown woman who can speak real full sentences, this is what we said last week.
Yeah, and I'm attracted to her strength.
Yes, and then I just feel like with every second that passed, like, that excitement and admiration and respect I had for Claire, like, truly was just like a downward spiral into rock bottom.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think it's really her Achilles heel, like that she's so, so strong. It's amazing. And it makes it so enjoyable to watch. But then like, she's a little too strong about certain things.
Too intense.
Yeah. And she there like, what, like you said on your Instagram story, she kind of crosses over into this teacher mode where it's like, we understand that you're like so correct and you're writing your convictions, but like to demand perfection of everyone, like it's off-putting.
Also, I got a DM really quickly. I don't want to get off track, but I've been saying teacher a lot, and people, we have a lot of teacher trusters who I absolutely love and respect. And I just need to say, I don't mean it in a negative way. When I say teacher, and I was trying to explain it to this girl, but I wasn't doing a good job. When I say teacher, it's like people who are like, won't choose a winner. Like you're all winners. That's like such a teacher answer. Claire was like literally like looking for inconsistencies in people's answers just so she could like call them out. Like she was a professor, like making sure you did the homework. I didn't mean teacher in any negative way.
I don't think that you didn't. I think it's just like the relationship between a teacher and student should not be the same relationship between boyfriend and girlfriend.
Okay, thank you. Like you were so much more articulate than me. Sorry to get off track. Yes. So I just felt like
like it's the relationship between camper and counselor.
Yes. There were like four or five moments.
They were all campers last night.
There were four or five moments that I just felt like Claire was so unreasonable. And that's a lot for one episode. The first was, I thought that, and I know she hasn't planned the dates, but I thought that one-on-one with that cutie, whose name, of course, I don't know, where they had to write the things
Jason.
Down, burn the dress, talk about their trauma. It's like, this is date one. This is, and I know that things are definitely expedited in the Bachelor world, but it was just like a little intense.
It was too intense.
And to expect someone who you just met to open up to you on that level on TV, and I feel like she would have been disappointed in him if he hadn't done that. I just thought that was wholly unreasonable.
I totally agree. And also for the viewer watching through the lens of like she has tunnel vision for Dale, it is so unfair for her to like want this man to open up like, because we know that she really is kind of giving him half a shot.
100%.
And I thought it was like extremely intense, too intense for a first date, too intense for television. And like he definitely met her expectations, I think. And he like there's obviously a lot to this man. But even if he hadn't, like I wouldn't have blamed him.
My second moment where Claire really let me down was the tantrum she threw about the awkward silence. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened, I think, was that the cocktail party had started, and I think in the past, the second she's like done with her toast,
they all clamor.
Can I grab? And there was maybe, you know, an extra second taken, and it was awkward, which awkward silences are terrible, but it's a group of nine relative strangers. Like, awkward silences are definitely bound to happen. And then that guy, of course, I don't remember his name, did Bennett did ask to talk to her like a few seconds later than she had wanted, and not only did she completely disregard him because she was so mad, she ditched the only guy who had actually expressed interest in talking to her. She literally got up in the middle because she wasn't listening, and then went to go reprimand a bunch of dudes for literally not jumping fast enough. It's I hate to say this because yes, Claire is a strong, powerful woman, but like she's a little unreasonable and kind of insufferable. Like, and I can't imagine wanting to be in a relationship with someone who's that particular.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I also feel like this is Claire's fifth time on the show. Like, she knows how it works. This is these guys' first group date. Like, they don't know that the minute the toast is over, that that's when you ask for her hand. Like,
oh, and by the way, if they did know exactly how the show worked, something would have went off in her brain. Be like, why do these guys know how to act so well in the show? How many episodes have they watched? Because she's so in her own fucking head.
No, I totally agree. And I understand why she probably felt a little awkward because no one jumped for her hand. But, like, she has to realize all of these guys are there for her. Sure, some aren't. But, like, most of them really are. They're taking time out of their lives, even though like who wouldn't want to be there right now,
right, in quarantine.
So for her to like question it so much, like not be able to let it go, and I like how she says she needs to give voice to her feelings or else they fester and whatnot. But there's also something to be said for letting something go.
There's also something to be said for just like social decorum. You can be really mad about something, but if this guy is now getting to talk to you, you haven't spent a lot of time with him, to literally cut him off mid-sentence and leave him there so you could go yell at the other dudes, like that's just not appropriate social behavior.
And when you like really look into it, like I just feel like she was upset with Dale for not being the 100%. First one to ask.
Now the Dale of it all is really interesting because she's saying a lot of things about Dale that we've never heard a lead say, being like, oh, my mind is with Dale, I can stop thinking about Dale. We're hearing her say a lot of those things, and I just thought it was really interesting that I pointed out is that she's saying all those things and you're not seeing her say them. They're dubbed in voiceovers because she didn't actually say them there.
Oh. But
because it wouldn't. She's not allowed to say stuff like that. But I think when they decided to end the season and then whatever they end up doing and the turn that it takes, they now could lean into the storyline of her being so obsessed with Dale. So she would be doing interviews and you would be seeing her speak. And then when she would say something like really particular about Dale, it would be a voiceover.
That's really smart. I wasn't watching closely enough to pick up on stuff like that. I was really like on my phone so much while watching. There was just like a few people who I picked my head up for. Dale, Blake Moynes, who we need to talk about. And I think that's it, actually.
So then the third thing that happened that kind of like put me off on the Claire on the clairvoyance was the next group date of Dodgeball. Now, for those who don't know, it was a game of Dodgeball, and Claire had the idea to make it strip Dodgeball so that there were two teams, and whatever team lost the first round took their shirts off, second round took their socks off, third round took their shorts off, and they were wearing like tiny little jock straps, like basically thongs. And I mean, I hate to be that person because I don't know if this is like such a lame thing to say, but like, of course, it felt very strange watching it because you couldn't help but wonder, like, if the gender roles were reversed, like, they would literally never let a bachelor be like, let's play strip volleyball. But then you think of the other side, it's like the girls on The Bachelor are always like being put in bikinis. I mean, bikinis are essentially naked. So it's like, I don't know where I stand like on the equality of it all, but I just know like watching it was really made me feel uncomfortable. It felt like not even like they were objectifying the men, but like embarrassing them almost to a point. And I just didn't like it. And there was only one guy there, I forget, was it Blake, who had like a normal reaction being like, why am I like being embarrassed? Like, okay, it's one thing to lose dodgeball, but to have to show you my nuts. Like, yeah, it was just very strange. And then her asking the losing team who was walking out naked, like for hugs, like the whole thing felt very off to me.
Yeah, very wrong. I agree that there is a level of sexualizing the cast that happens on both sides, but a bathing suit and being fully nude are totally different
without an option. Like,
it made me really uncomfortable even when they were playing dodgeball and like just jock straps and they were like falling on the floor and stuff, and it's like their bits are like hanging out,
yeah, with their legs in the air. Like, it was so vile.
I was so uncomfortable, and that's not acceptable.
No, and I hate to be like a weenie and like be that girl, but like, I don't know, it just like, I kind of felt bad for some of them. Like, okay, not everyone, and don't get me wrong, there's definitely a bunch of thirst monsters on there who were very excited to be naked and like thought it was funny, but they're probably just like nice Hamish guys there who like literally like their families watch this show and like they just didn't intend to like show their nuts.
Yeah, and I thought that them wearing the jock straps was like really crazy, but then the fact that they like took them off and then were like walking around just like fully nude, I think it's wrong.
Yeah, it gave me really weird vibes. And like, I don't know, Claire, it was, I don't know if it was edited this way, but it was made to seem like it was Claire's idea and like she was the one like living for it, and like then asking them all for hugs, like, I don't know, it really made me feel really weird.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was not here for it.
And then the fourth thing that shook up my night is the one thing I think you and I might have disagreed on, and probably was the most cringy part of the episode, was after that date at the cocktail, she's talking to that guy Brandon, who according to my research is like a lovely Jewish real estate agent from Ohio. I know.
Okay, never mind.
And I thought he was cute, and he was just like nervous and like trying to talk, and they slipped into like a really uncomfortable conversation where he essentially said, and correct me if I'm recalling it wrong, he said, you know, I'm so excited to be here when I found out that you were the Bachelorette, like I applied immediately, like I just thought you were so
beautiful.
I had to come, I thought you were so beautiful. And she was like, oh my god, really? Like,
no, well, first he said, I had to come, I found out you're about to write, I had to come. She's like, oh my god, really? Like, what about me made you have to come?
Oh wait,
for
no
me?
Sorry, it all started when he said, tell me like a little bit about you, I feel like I don't know that much about you. Like, I know you're from San Francisco.
No Sacramento. This is what happened. I watched it all like a train wreck in front of me. He said, you know, I guess he was like, he told us in his interview before that like he didn't have time with her and he was like really excited to make a good impression.
He had a lot of like riding on this conversation.
Yeah, so he said, I was so excited when it was you. Like, I'm here because it was you. I was so excited I had to come. And she said, oh, what was it about me? And he said, well, you know, you're so beautiful. And then it became like clear that he didn't really know that much about her. But so he said, but I don't know that much about you. Please tell me. Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted her that to be a jumping off point for them to like start letting each other know about each other. But Claire saw like the fallacy in the part that where he said that he came for her but then didn't know anything about her.
And she was like offended that he might have come for her only because he thought she was beautiful, not that she knew anything about her insides. And it was just so, first of all, I thought the way that she acted, let's say she had this realization, I think the way she spoke to him was so condescending, and like the way she just like shuttled him out, like literally ended the conversation like, can I walk you out? I thought it was so rude and like so disrespectful for someone who literally put their life on the line and quarantined for a month, 2 weeks at home and 2 weeks for you in Palm Springs. I thought it was just such a rude way to shutter someone out. And the way she reacted was literally like he said, like he literally called her like a name. Like I just thought it was incredible overreaction. And I actually really like on a season of The Bachelorette where the girl is in the middle of a date and like knows that it's not right and doesn't want to waste their time. And Caitlin Bristow used to do that a lot. And I actually have a lot of respect for people who do that, who are like in a nice way, like, you know what? I know you have a life back home and I don't want to waste your time. I just like feel like there's no connection here. Like, I think you should go home. I actually think in the long run, that's the nicer thing to do. But that's not what this was. It was so rude. And honestly, I'm trying to get into her mind of like what she was most upset about. And
it wasn't that he was only there for her looks. That's not why she was upset. She was upset because she thought, and she kind of did catch him in a lie, because what he said about coming here for her, he's only here because it's her, was untrue because he doesn't know anything about her.
How do you know anything about her?
Well, other people would be from watching the seasons.
Oh, but so what does she want? A guy who studied all the seasons?
This is what
a guy who studied Bachelor Winter Games, Bachelor in Paradise 1, Bachelor in Paradise 2, Juan Pablo season. A guy who studied all of that, knows everything about her, has a fan club about Claire, and then comes with a journal with a scrapbook of all the pictures he loves of her. She's so unreasonable.
No, here's what she wants. She doesn't need all of that, but if you're not Claire's number one fan, you don't come, you don't start with, I'm here because it's you, because I was so excited for you, when you don't know her. Like,
why?
So
I don't think there's anything wrong with cast as the Bachelorette and being like, you know what? I actually think we might work. Like, she's a similar age to me. She's from Sacramento and she's beautiful. Like, those are the baseline things when you meet someone before you go on a date with anyone. Where are you from? What do you look like? What do you do? Like, that's literally all you know about a person.
He's not from Sacramento. So
he might be. Who fucking knows?
No, but he was like, I think the way that he framed it up, didn't have to know all this stuff. I know, but she thought she caught him in a lie and then like just saw right through him and was like, you're not here for me. You're just saying the things you think I want to hear.
It wasn't that deep.
No, but
Claire, it wasn't that deep.
I agree with you, but I'm saying like that's where she was coming from. It wasn't that
she needs someone. She set
him up. It's not that she needs someone who's watched every season, who knows everything about her already. But don't pretend like you know her before you do and then it becomes clear that you don't know her.
Oh my God, pretend. They're on TV. They have conversations.
I don't know.
And he didn't pretend he knew anything about her. He just said, when I saw it was you, I was excited and I signed up.
I think
it was meant to be a compliment, a flattery, and that's it.
And I think when he said that,
she's so in her own head, she's going to be her own demise.
I think when he said that was untrue. Whoever it was, he was going to be there, and that's what she thought too. Because there's nothing about her that would have made him want to come other than he wants to come on The Bachelorette.
No.
And she
maybe there's now an age-appropriate girl for him.
He's 28 years old, so no. He slipped up. She saw it. Then she saw like what could potentially be the worst about him, which is like he's just saying what she thinks she wants to hear because he wants to be here for this, that, and the other thing. And when you are The Bachelor, you are extremely on edge that like everybody is here just to use you and be on television, because a lot of them are. So yes, her paranoia came through. She didn't give this guy a chance who might actually be a good guy, but he led with like a statement that was just like a platitude that was not true because it was what she wanted to hear.
You know,
I actually don't like people who just say stuff to say it, even when there's nothing to back it up.
That's television, baby. Like, that's literally what this show is. Like, oh, this journey. Oh, I'm feeling love on this journey.
Okay, well, then lie better. Yeah, lie better.
I just did not think it was that deep at all. I thought she was being really, like, nasty and rude to a guy who was just seemingly, like, trying to make conversation. It really wasn't that deep. It gave off the vibe that she's like deeply insecure and like paranoid, and it actually might end up like being her demise. And you know what? She has a little bit of nerve to be so hard on like a perfectly nice guy when she very well knows that her mind is already made up. Like, you're not actually considering any of the other guys here. So to embarrass this guy when you're going to end up embarrassing all them because you already know who you want to go home with. Like, I just thought it was really, I thought it was rude. It really rubbed me the wrong way. And that was like the nail in the coffin, where she was rubbing me the wrong way the whole episode. And then that, and I was like, oh, this is not going to work for me, because it's just, none of these relationships have any hope.
Yeah.
Except for Dale.
It didn't rub me so wrong, because I think I saw what she, that's her worst fear. Like, and that's any Bachelorette's worst fear. Someone's coming on to be on the show to be famous and literally gives not a shit about you. And
oh my God, I didn't get that vibe from him at all.
I know, like, I did.
I just think he was trying to talk and he was nervous on TV.
Like, he was nervous on TV, but he said something, like, he led with a lie.
I don't know, of all the guys there, he just like never gave me the vibe that he wants to like sell tea on Instagram. Like, and he very well may end up doing that because, you know, opportunity knocks and you open the door. But I, like, of all the guys, he was just like a quiet, nice guy. Like, I literally didn't think anything of it. And when he started to call her out, I also didn't get the vibe that he was like a dick and he was like being defensive. And you know what? He could have been a lot more rude to her when she was like, can I walk you out? I would have been like, no, get the hell out of my way. I'm going home. Like, he could have been a lot ruder to her. And the fact that he wasn't, I think, proves that he's just, like, still, like, a nice Hamish guy.
I do think that he is a nice person. And she probably let the wrong, like, she definitely read into it too much and let a good guy go. But she's just, like, she's so, because she's, I guess, of her age and her strength and maturity, like, she's so
matter of fact
and, like, militaristic about everyone acting right. And so when they don't, it's over. And okay. I think that that,
I that
and I think that while in some instances it's a great quality, I think it's a double-edged sword, and yeah. That's what you're seeing.
I also just think, like, her bar for appropriate behavior is just, like, insanely
high.
No, she's
demanding perfection of everyone. Every statement that they say has to be completely true and genuine, and which is, like, yes, things you say should be true and genuine, but, like, to react like that when they're not, it could have just been an awkward conversation. She could have let him go at the rose ceremony.
Right.
And no one would be the wiser. But, like, to have to be, like, so, like, right and, you know, I hear what you're saying. I don't feel so strongly that, like, as strongly as you about it, because I kind of saw where
what
she was
she
coming
saw.
From. But yeah, the way she went about it was all wrong. And the only other thing I want to talk about was Blake Moynes coming to the...
I love him.
Coming to the group date, even though he lost. And, like, I feel like it was a great move because I love him. But, like, if it was any other character, I would have been like, get this guy out of here. And I actually feel like when he did it, Claire did not respect the decision.
I agree.
She was kind of rude to him. But then she went back and, like, thought about how she should feel about it.
And she has to be consistent in how she feels.
And then she, like, had to undo, like, turning him down, and so she gave him the rose then and there, because, like, that's the kind of man she does think that she wants. She just, like, didn't like it in that moment.
Yeah, by the way, I totally agree. I thought she was definitely gonna yell at him, but then, like, I think she just had to be consistent, and she'd yelled enough people for one night. Like, she had to go be nice to Blake, and he's just so, like, pathetic and sweet, and, like, I just want him to be happy, and he just, like, likes Claire, and, like, she literally doesn't even know his name, because when he showed up, I think that she thought he was someone else at first, because there's so many guys at this point.
But she really likes him. He got the first rose on the first night. After Dale.
Yeah, after Dale.
And that's always the person, like, I think Lauren Bushnell got that rose. She didn't get the first impression rose. Like, that is always the person that you should look out
for.
Keep
your eye on. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
But I also am, like, worried for him now, because obviously, like, she's all in on Dale and he's going all in on her. So when Tayshia arrives, how is he going to pivot?
Survive.
He's just going to be, like, always Claire's runner-up.
Yeah, agreed. When Tayshia arrives, a lot of these dudes are going home. But honestly, Claire barely has a connection with any of them, that I actually think there'll be a lot of guys who are going to stick around for Tayshia.
No, 100%. I just don't know how Blake could... I keep wanting to call him Blair. How Blake could make that pivot.
Also, I think Claire is also rubbing a lot of the guys the wrong way. I think we see that with Yosef. And I know people don't like him, but I definitely understand his frustration with Claire, like, because she is acting, like, a little mean. Is he the one who says, mm-hmm. you're the oldest... Okay, then he's a dick.
I think. We still don't have confirmation.
We don't know who it is, but he's a dick if he says that. But I think that a lot of the guys are just, like, they feel like they literally haven't spoken to Claire. They have no connection. They're jealous of her connection with Dale. And they maybe don't like being yelled at all the time and then, like, embarrass him. And I think that when Tayshia comes, like, a lot of them will actually be excited and want to stay.
Yeah.
It's not like so many of them have connections already.
I do also think that the first few episodes are always slow. And with the group, like, we don't even know who these guys are. She barely does. In the beginning, they are there, like, just being friends and playing dodgeball and having drinks. By, you know, seven episodes in, like, things do start to get serious, but I feel like it never got to that point because, one, she is so in on Dale, and two, because they don't have all the regular distractions
right.
of the usual Bachelor season, the house, the trips, laying by the pool, like, all together, and so everyone's just, like, really focused on, like, oh, we have no connection with her. It's, like, so early.
Yeah.
Usually they're still distracted.
And the dates are just, like, pathetic. Like, that indoor rec room they were first playing dodgeball at was just, like, made me want
to
cry.
I'm sorry. The date where they had to do their love languages and, like, speak up to her.
She's standing on a balcony like Romeo and Juliet.
But, like, to do something like that week one where they have to, like, affirm their love verbally to Claire
right.
when they literally just met her. Like, to me, that's not genuine. And if she's the Claire who also doesn't want to hear that I'm here for you even though I don't know you, why do you want to hear all these nice things from guys who also don't know you?
Right. And that's, to me, like, the fatal flaw with the Bachelor and Bachelorette franchise is that, yes, you know who you're going for, and most of the guys definitely like Claire and, like, want to be with her. Some of them are there for fame, but it's very possible, and I feel like it doesn't happen enough, where, like, you meet the person, like, you're just not into them. And it's like, I feel like the only time I ever remember that happening is when Becca Tilley left Chris Soul season. She was like, no, I just, like, don't like you. And it's like, you just, the fact that you go on a show and you don't really know the person at all on a personal level, and you're just expected to fall in love with them, like, sometimes you just don't like the person. And, like, where's that? Where's that experience? That never happens.
Yeah.
It happened a little bit with Cassie.
And it just doesn't air. But right. I also think with Becca Tilly, like, she was his runner-up. Like, if you know you don't like him, like, make Bounce. That known sooner.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I just, that's the always thing missing. I got really heated with that Claire thing. Sorry, I kept, like, talking over you. I just, like, really.
It's okay. You feel strongly. You're passionate. I
do. I'm just, like.
I'd love to see you passionate about The Bachelor. Like, usually we can't even think of, like, something to say.
No, I mean, and you know what? It's crazy that I even have this much to say, because last night's episode was truly one of the worst 2 hours of television in my life. Like, time was moving like maple syrup, like, so chunky and slow. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, I just kept looking at my phone. It was like 8:30, 8:45. I'm like, yeah. Oh my God. No, it was rough.
I feel you. I do.
So let us know your thoughts. I would love to hear what everyone has to think. And that was our TV recap segment. And now it is Dear Toasters. And I'm very excited to dive into these. Dear Toasters, if you're new here, which I know so many of you are, like, we're just getting, like, millions and millions of new listeners every day. It's like, it's honestly exhausting, like, to be so popular. So, and just, like, have to explain everything that I do. It's really difficult. Dear Toasters is our advice segment. So if you ever want to write us in, all of these submissions are from our listeners. It's deartoasters@gmail.com. We'll always keep it anonymous, and you can change people's names if you want to. And you can really write in about anything. Today, we have quite a robust group of submissions. Let's just dive right in. I'm getting to that point in the show where I'm, like, starting to slur my words because I'm so tired.
Do you need water?
You know what? Sure. Like, let's hydrate. This is actually a long episode. We don't really do episodes this long. Okay, I feel better. Hi, Jackie and Claudia. Love you, gals. Let's dive right in. Recently, my ex-boyfriend started dating my current boyfriend's sister, and it's getting very serious. I've tried to let it go, but I simply cannot. It's really eating me up, and I don't know what to do. Let me hit you with all the facts. I dated the ex for about a year while my current boyfriend and I were taking some time apart. The two guys obviously hate each other and almost got into a fight before. My ex is also the type of guy who constantly reached out after our breakup to tell me he'd always love me and be there for me. I live with my boyfriend and I'm extremely close with his family. We have dinner together at least 3 nights a week. The sister has stopped participating in family events completely, which makes me think that she's avoiding me. She introduced him to their mom, and I've heard through the grapevine he'll be at Thanksgiving. How do I handle this? I'm in such a happy place in my relationship, and his family treats me like their own. I feel like my ex dating my future sister-in-law is really threatening that. I'm so angry, I think I might explode during Thanksgiving. Thanks for any advice you have to give. A very stressed toaster. That's horrible.
That is really hard, but what you have to do, and the only thing you can do, is take the high road. Mm-hmm. If you do anything other than that, you will regret it. If you explode at Thanksgiving, like, the only person who will look bad is you. You just have, if you are so happy with your current boyfriend, like, just ride that out, like, enjoy the joy there and just ignore the rest of it. If the sister and the ex-boyfriend are OTP meant to be, then, like, that's beautiful for them. I don't think that that's the case. I think that they are all trying to ruffle your feathers. But the worst thing you can do when someone is trying to ruffle your feathers is let your feathers be ruffled.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about this and I'm trying to think, like, who can I place blame on, and, like, who can I be mad at? And you know what, now that I think about it, it's extremely uncool of the sister. Like, for this ex-boyfriend, he's, like, just dating a girl. He doesn't care. Like, he doesn't owe anyone anything. But, like, the sister owes it to her brother and his girlfriend, like, to be respectful and not, like, date her ex, you know? I feel like it's very uncool of her.
I think that this ex is clearly very, like, kind of crazy, maybe. And what he does can't be predicted. But if the sister is, like, a nice sister, then what she does can be. So, and, like, she could act better. So unless, like, this is, like, true love and you're standing in the way, just let it play out, because yeah. You know what, even, like, spite relationships run their course.
Yes, Black China and Rob,
right? So just patience is key. Take the high road.
And Jackie said it best, someone's trying to ruffle your feathers, the best thing you can do is just to not, like, be unbothered, not let your feathers get ruffled.
Don't give them exactly what they want, because if Thanksgiving goes smoothly and you're unbothered and it's so clear you're happy in your relationship and you don't care about your ex enough to even care what he's doing, like, he will grow tired and he will probably, if it's not a real relationship, he will exit the scene shortly thereafter if you don't give him what he's looking for. Like, please just stay steady.
Yeah, and just, like, ignore, shrug it off. That would make me so angry. I'm trying to think, like,
because the opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference.
It's so true.
So you being hateful just shows him that you're closer to love than indifference. So if you're indifferent,
right? I'm trying to think of, like, that would be like, I mean, I don't really have any ex-boyfriends, but, like, one of them dating Ben's sister, right?
Yeah,
that would be very strange.
Yeah,
and make me definitely uncomfortable. Not angry, but uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to you. Next up, Dear Toasters, I read his diary. Yes, you read that right. My boyfriend and I have been long distance for a year and a half. He went to a wedding last weekend and then came to visit me. When we were together, we went to get gas, and while he was at a pump, I noticed a journal on the ground. I couldn't help myself, and I picked it up and opened it to the last entry. Long story short, it said, "They say when you know, you know. I wonder if that's true. I've been putting up walls and have been complacent and inconsiderate. I want true love. I want what blank and blank people in the wedding he went to. I want what they have. I confronted him about it and apologized for reading it, but overall I decided I wanted to break up with him. If he doesn't know, then I don't want to waste his time because I thought I knew he was the one for me. He begged me to give him a chance to open up and be more vulnerable with him and to put more effort in our relationship because he respects me and can see a future with me. AKA, he would break up with me if he didn't see it. We are still together, but I can't stop replaying the words in my head. What do you think? I'm 26, turning. He just turned 27. How long should I wait for him to realize I'm the one? I really do love this guy. Sincerely, a toaster and a redhead."
Oh, redhead, so she's with an A?
Yes. She's obviously like a well-read genius with a great taste in podcasts.
I just want to say, because I need to say this, like, I really don't condone you reading his diary.
I knew you were going to have an opinion.
I don't know. I just think that everyone deserves a piece of privacy, and for a lot of people, like, that's their phones, and like, so you don't snoop, but you do if you have like well-founded suspicions. I just think that reading someone's diary is like so wrong. We've spoken about this before, and I think you would tell her to break up with him because he even keeps a diary.
Yeah, no. Oh my god, I'm actually traumatized. I cannot speak on men who keep diaries because I'm traumatized because
of what you did.
What I did, yeah, when we were in Nashville. We did a week of shows in Nashville around CMA Fest like 3 years ago, and we were in this studio and we hired like all these freelance videographers, camera guys, AV, and they were so nice and cool, and like we like really had created like a bond with them over the week. And on one of the last days, we were doing like a Dear Toasters.
No, wait, Olivia Creedy was on, and she was talking about how the man that she was seeing had a diary and should she read it.
Oh, and I just like went off about like men who write diaries are sissies and it's weird, and I was just like railing on just like the male species having diaries, and I was like saying to the camera guys, I'm like, you guys don't have diaries, right? And this one guy was like, no, I do, I journal every day. And I was like, that's beautiful. So I stay out of the journaling conversation now since I offended an entire gender. So maybe you just take this one.
So, okay, honestly, I'm surprised that after you read his diary and his innermost thoughts were exposed, which were, like, not sure about you, that he even, like, wanted to stay together.
Right, because he would be, should be mad.
So, like, this is obviously an extremely mature person. And I don't know. I feel two types of ways. Because I feel like, on the one hand, sometimes when someone, like, doesn't know, and how long, did they say how long they'd been together?
No.
Like, sometimes.
Oh, yes, a year and a half, but they're long distance.
Oh, that's really tough. Like, sometimes a year and a half, like, is enough to know that you don't know, and that means that you know that it's wrong.
Right, and, like, the fact that it's been a year and a half, and, like, you really know, and, like, he's the one, and he just, like, can't decide, it's like, you want to be with someone who, like, wants to be with you. You want to be wanted.
Yeah. I agree.
But can I just say something?
But the fact that, like, he is unsure, but he's the one who's fighting for the relationship and for you to give him another chance. Like, I don't know. I think that there's something that could be there. Mm-hmm. I really do. I just.
Right. No, now that he's, like, not willing to let you go means that, like, you probably are the one. But, like, it doesn't feel nice that, like, it's taking him so long to figure it out.
But
it's
I also feel like it's kind of like when you're in an investigation or like a court procedure, when you gather evidence illegally, like, it is stricken from the record, it doesn't count,
right?
And so I don't think that, like, you should know his inner, like, people's innermost thoughts, like, you know, that they would share with only themselves in their diary, like, are not, there's a reason why it's private, and there's a reason why he didn't say it to you. And that's why I don't like when people read someone else's diary, because we are all entitled to our thoughts.
I totally agree.
And so that's why I want to strike his diary from the record, because it also was right after a wedding. Like, this is one diary entry where he had he saw a beautiful love relationship and just questioned what he had for a second. Like, that he didn't say it to you. Like, mm-hmm. He didn't make it permanent. It was for him.
No, you're right. It's people are entitled to their own thoughts. And if we don't have our thoughts, what do we have?
And so I feel like the diary is evidence that was acquired without a warrant. And it should be stricken from the record. And now evaluate your relationship for the past year and a half.
It's inadmissible.
Are you happy?
It's inadmissible.
It's inadmissible.
I want to say something really quickly about journaling. I just want to, like, go on the record, because the last time I spoke about journaling specifically as it pertains to men, like, I roasted them, and that was like 4 years ago, and I feel like I've actually really changed my stance on that, and I just want to put it on the record, because normalize changing your opinions based on new information. Now that I have marinated with it and I'm in a much more mature place in my life, I actually really respect men who journal, and I'm not just saying this to, like, make up for like me literally being so mean. But it's like when I was watching Mad Men, when Don is in this like really dark place in his life, and then he decides to get his life together and he starts swimming every morning and he starts journaling and it's just like writing random things about his feeling. It's actually like a deeply mature and introspective thing to be able to do. And like, I've never journaled and I don't know if I'm willing to be that insightful, but
honest with yourself,
for like a man to do it, I don't know. It's actually very impressive. I wish Ben would journal. I do. I wish he was that, you know, sensitive.
Yeah, but Ben can't journal because he knows that you'll read it.
100%.
And it's like, if I knew that my husband journaled, it would be really hard for me not to read it.
Of course.
But I would try every day to not.
And no, I would like fully read it every night.
Yeah, no,
But I would never bring it up. I just would like want to know like what he's thinking. And it's not because I'm malicious, it's because I love him so much. I just want to know everything.
But what if you saw stuff in there that like was hard for you to accept?
Like what?
And, like that was stuff about you and, you know.
Well, he would obviously like not be able to write anything about me in the journal. That would be the rule. I'd be like, I would say, I won't read your journal. You just can't write anything about me. And then I would read every night to make sure he's following the rules.
Okay. But then you didn't follow the rules.
But he doesn't need to know because I will never bring it up to him.
But it might affect how you behave and treat him.
No, I can fake it.
Okay.
Okay, final one. Hi, Claudia, Jackie, and Dr. Theodore Facheman.
Hi, T-H-E-O.
I'm hoping for some premium advice on my problem. My husband and I have another couple we are very close with. It's been a few years since we all became friends, and I've just been trying my hardest to like the wife of my husband's friend, but I just don't. I've come to the conclusion that she is either obsessed with me or is beyond insecure. She asked me where all my clothes are from and even what size they are. Anything that I've mentioned I want, purse, plants, etc., she immediately goes out and buys it. Oh my God, that's so annoying.
For herself?
Yeah. Every time I go over to their house, she has to take me on a tour of everything she's bought recently, and I just don't care. I've mentioned this to my husband, but I feel badly because he's so close with his friend, and they always want us to hang out as a foursome. I say no to plans from time to time because it takes a lot of energy to hang out with the wife, and I just don't always have it. It's clear that these people aren't going away, so how do I help this chick to be less obsessed with me? Sincerely, what the fuck do I do? To be honest, this is like a real problem being a couple, like, because you have couple friends, and it's like, you either, like, are in it because the wife is friends with the wife and like the husband stinks, or you're friends with it because the husband's friends with the husband's and then the wife stinks. It's like, it's very rare that you find a couple where it's like you like the husband and the wife just as much. And it makes like double dating awkward. And it makes like growing up like and being friends and then like being married friends, it makes it just complicated.
This is how things change.
But particularly with this girl, it's, there's nothing more annoying than a girl who like, oh, I like blue cargo pants. And then like literally the next day shows up wearing blue cargo pants, pretending like it was her idea. Like,
yeah.
Someone who lacks creativity and like original ideas and style and like doesn't own it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree. I think the solution here is like, one, obviously just be clear with your husband. Like these aren't, like she's not your people, but you'll support him when necessary. And two, like maybe just go out for dinner so you're not having to go to their house and like see all of her new things. Like if you can, or do double dates that are activities where everyone's
distracted,
busy, so that you're not like stuck listening to her. But sometimes you just got to take one for the team. But also maybe work on fostering couple friendships that might take your husband away from this friendship. Like,
yes,
you just have to be like, if you're, it's just like criticism, like, or when you say something negative, like don't do just something negative. Like also give an option for a better,
yeah,
solution, you know.
Also, you have to tell your husband, like, I'll continue to do this, but like just be mindful that I'm not having a good time. So like when it's time to leave, like let's go. Like if your husband's like dragging it out because he's having a great time with his friend, drinking beer, watching football, being like, no, when we say we're leaving at 8, like you come get me at 8. Like I'll do this for you, you do that for me.
Yeah,
it's a compromise. That's what marriage is.
Yeah, but this is not sustainable. So no. Just then the foursome's gonna suffer, you know.
Yeah, you can't say anything to the wife because at the end of the day, she's just trying to like impress you. And, yeah, like, she's not mean. She's just annoying.
He can still be friends with his friend, like, and yeah, you don't have to go.
Guys' night.
I think that's fine.
It's a guys' night.
Yeah,
sounds fun.
Sounds wonderful.
GNO. Just make some other couple friends so like your social events calendar is like so busy with clam bakes, trips to the Cape that you can't literally fit in time for this couple. Maybe once a month now.
Maybe just a dinner, 2 hours tops. They need the table.
That's the thing. It's like when you're going out to dinner, like time is of the essence.
Yeah. But also like she can't show you her new closet of all the things that were your idea.
Her new plant. Yeah. Yeah. We should probably start taking pictures of them and show you them at dinner.
Also, like, if you just want to be a little petty, why don't you, like, say you want something that's, like, really ugly. And then she'll start wearing that, and then you can have the last laugh.
Also, if you want to be petty, like, stop sharing things with her, like, what you want. Just keep that information to yourself.
No, or just share, like, bad, really expensive things. Be like, I've been saving up for this,
these, like, corduroy overalls.
These, like, Swarovski Crocs.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. That's actually good advice. So again, that was Dear Toasters. Thank you guys for submitting and trusting us with your qualms and quandaries. And if you ever want to write in, the email to email us is deartoasters@gmail.com.
I actually think Crocs get a really bad rap, and I absolutely love them.
Agreed. So I wear them almost every day.
I just want to retract what I said. Because
they're dropping fire collabs, Justin Bieber, Luke Combs.
Maybe a Swarovski messenger back.
Yeah, like a square. No, like a, like, yeah.
Yeah. No, I actually love Crocs. Like, we wear Crocs. And I think, like, it really bothers me when other people talk about them, like, as the ugliest.
It's like the go-to joke.
Ugly thing. But, like, I don't think that, like, I think that they have so much value and I don't want to pile on.
No. And it's like, whether you're wearing them in the summer or now they make ones with fur inside, like, they're literally perfect. They're giving Ugg a run for their money. I said it.
No, I totally agree. And you know what? I think they make your legs look skinny. I said it.
Oh, you said it too. Ben wears them every single day. There's a pair of Crocs outside my door for when we walk Theo four times a day, almost every day. I saw a friend last week. She was wearing fur Crocs. Like, they're taking over Manhattan, I'm just saying.
No, I absolutely love to see it. Justice for Crocs.
J for C. Thank you guys so much for listening to The Morning Toast, the Millennial Morning Show, where we deliver the fast five stories that you need to know every morning, Monday through Friday on YouTube. So if you're watching us on YouTube, please feel free to subscribe and give this video a thumbs up. We're also available as a podcast anywhere podcasts can be found. So that's Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Public Radio, iHeartRadio, CastBox, all the places. So wherever you listen to podcasts, find us, The Morning Toast, and leave a five-star review about how beautiful, stunning, and smart we are. We hope you have an amazing day. Happy hump day. Hump someone you love, and we will see you tomorrow for Thursday's show.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.